Good evening, everyone. My name is Mike, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Mike.
Happy to be here on this lovely July 10th evening. Tonight, what we're going to attempt to do is take a look at the chapter to employers and maybe a little bit different way that than you may have taken a look at it before. As I begin to really look at and study to employers, which begins on page 136, I really saw how, just as the other chapters we covered, chapter 7 and 8 and some of chapter 9, has a lot of really good 12-step tips in there. Tips and tools that we can use to 12-step another alcoholic into recovery. And I began to take a look at two employers and saw that it really overlapped a lot with particularly chapter 7, working with others. As I may have said last week or previous weeks, for a long time I was ignorant to the information that was in a lot of these later chapters, particularly chapters 8, 9, and 10, because I looked at the title, Two Wives, and maybe scanned over it a little bit, and I said, well, I'm not a wife, and at that time I wasn't married, so there's probably nothing in here for me, and I looked at the family afterward, and I said, well, still lucky enough to have a family, but I don't live with them, so who needs that? And two employers, I'm not an employer, I'm not an employer, and I'm lucky enough to be an employee, so there's probably nothing in there that's good for me. And I remain ignorant for a few years about these chapters, and finally began to take a look at them, and I think it's a shame that, I don't know about you guys, but I've heard and been to a heck of a lot of big book studies, big book workshops, retreats, whatever you want to call them. And I know chances are it's probably for a lack of time, but I think it's a shame that usually when Sunday morning rolls around, there's really only a drive-by shooting done with steps 10, 11, and 12, and you really don't get into too much in step 12 other than carry this message to others and take maybe a quick look at chapter 7, and you're lucky if you read the last two paragraphs on page 164. But I got a set of tapes a couple years ago, and the guy and his wife who was in Al-Anon, they took the time out to really look at these chapters and really explain what's going on in these chapters. And because of those tapes and because of a couple other people in my life who had also taken the time to look at these later chapters, or a buddy of mine, Dave, calls them the lost chapters. And I won't tell you what I used to call these chapters. But there's a lot of good stuff in here, and I think we really miss a lot if we don't take a look at them. But what I'm going to attempt to do tonight is take a look at chapter 10, to the employers, in a little bit different way that you might be accustomed to, and take a look at it in a way that really coincides with working with others. Look at the 12-step tips and probably find out that there's as many tips in here for me to 12-step someone into the fellowship and into the program and to work with a drunk and help them with the program. There's probably as many tips in this chapter as there is in chapter 7, working with others, if I take a look at it the way we're going to take a look at it tonight. If there's anyone in this room that is an employer, I strongly suggest you read this chapter from front to back, and really take a look at what it's saying. If you would, turn to page 140. Like I said, I'm going to take a look at some of the tips in here, and if there's time left when we get done with this chapter, I'll get into a vision for you a little bit. And for anyone who may have forgotten or hasn't been here before, this is our second to last week. We'll wrap it up next week. And I think what I'd like to do, time permitting, and if you guys would humor me in this, anyone who has gone through this book again and anyone who has gone through the steps during the past 4.5 months that we've been getting together here, I think what I'd like to do is open it up at the very end of next week and hear from you guys and hear from maybe the benefits and rewards and some stuff that you discovered in going through the steps again and maybe renewing your spirit with this process. So for the regulars here, I'd love to hear from you in that regard. 140, first full paragraph. And this is, of course, in regards to dealing with alcoholism. Can you discard the feeling that you're dealing only with habit, with stubbornness, or weak will? If this presents difficulty, rereading chapters 2 and 3, and that's the chapter There's a Solution and More About Alcoholism, where the alcoholic sickness is discussed at length, might be worthwhile. And remember, we're talking about one-on-one work here with another alcoholic, and if I take a look at my own story, my own experience, and my own drinking habits and pattern, of course, if I'm working with another real alcoholic, of course I'm going to be able to discard the feeling that I'm dealing only with habit, because being a real alcoholic myself, I know that alcoholism and drinking for a real alcoholic is much more than habitual. It goes back to the mental obsession and the physical craving for more liquor once I put it in my body, and what we've been talking about for weeks and months now, the spiritual malady, you know, the way I felt since I can first remember, you know, that feeling of just not being able to fit in, that feeling of uselessness, being full of fear, not being of real help to other people, not being able to make a happy and successful life for myself, and having trouble in personal relationships of all things. Mm-hmm. Can you imagine that? Stubbornness, I mean, come on, I've never met a drunk that hasn't been stubborn. And weak will, you know, this thing isn't about being weak will, as I may have thought early on, and as people in my life who were obviously non-alcoholics may have thought. You know, it's always a good idea to go back and read chapters 2 and 3, There's a Solution, More About Alcoholism. A good friend of mine, Howard, has said multiple amount of times that chapter 3, More About Alcoholism, is probably the best tool to use for a chronic relapser than we've ever seen before, you know, because it really gets into the mental states which precedes the alcoholic going back into a drinking spree. So for me, when I'm working one-on-one with another alcoholic or trying to 12-step an alcoholic into our program, it's not only a good idea for me to do some reading up on Chapter 7, working with others, but it's also a good idea to take a look at some of the other chapters, particularly 3. Skip on over to page 141. And for those that have been here, we've, you know, with earlier portions of the book, we've pretty much gone line by line. And this thing would probably drag out to be 30 weeks if we did that. So we're going to skip around and touch on some of the highlights. And, 141, right smack dab in the middle of the first full paragraph. See if you can, not necessarily the page number, but see, when I read this, see if you can relate this to what part of Chapter 7 it's talking about. And I'll mention that after I read this. If you are sure your man does not want to stop, he may as well be discharged. And of course, they're talking about being discharged from the job there. The sooner the better. You're not doing him a favor by keeping him on. Firing such an individual may prove to be a blessing. It may be just the jolt he needs. And don't get me wrong, I'm, as far as one-on-one sponsorship is concerned, I'm not much one for this business about, well, I fired my sponsor or I fired my sponsee because they drank again. No, I'm not talking about that stuff. To me, what these few lines speak to is page 96, where it talks about that, you know, if your prospect doesn't want to go through with the program, don't spend too much time on any one person. Search out another alcoholic and try to give away what you have to somebody else who really wants it and needs it. Skip down to the next paragraph. But there are many men who want to stop, and with them you can go far. Your understanding treatment of their cases will pay dividends. And, you know, me being a real alcoholic, that's what I have to offer, is a lot of understanding with another drunk, you know. I guess early on, when I would work with people and they would go back to drinking or they just didn't want the program or whatever, I guess I forgot who and what I was because I used to take that stuff personally and, you know, get mad at them. And they drank on me, you know. And the more and more I worked with other people, the more and more I worked with my sponsor, and more I did this work myself, I realized that when it comes to going back and drinking, they had no choice in the matter. You know, they're real alcoholics. And the natural thing for a real alcoholic who is left untreated and isn't armed with the facts about himself and hasn't engaged in the spiritual solution that this book offers, the natural thing that they're going to do is to go back and drink again. You know, and I took a look at myself and I saw that when I didn't have the solution and when I wasn't willing to apply these steps in my life, I drank. So, you know, it's also a great statement of hope in there where it reads, but there are many men who want to stop, and with them you can go very far. Page 142. And for a few minutes, we're really going to stay focused on 142 and 143 because there's a lot of good stuff in here. This first paragraph, I'm going to show you how to use as a tool. Probably for a good year now, I've been using this as a tool to 12-step an alcoholic, even before we get going in the steps. When we talked about working with others, I told you a little bit about what I do with what can be called the step before the step, how I 12-step an alcoholic and you know, why waste his time and why waste my time if they're not willing to go through with the steps. And for those that weren't here for that, there's two questions that I ask them. First of all, I outline the program of action for them, and I do maybe a little 20 or 30 minute pitch on all 12 steps, and it's nothing that's rehearsed. I just go from my own experience, and a lot of times this is over the phone because they hear about this crazy guy Mike who actually uses the big book to take people through the steps. So they somehow get a hold of my number and they call me and you know, they'll say something really wacky like, will you sponsor me? And I'll say, well, wait a minute. You don't know me, and you don't know how I sponsor, so let me tell you how that looks like. You know, we talk about in the fellowship, well, I got to be willing to go to any lengths, but none of us ever bother to tell the people what any lengths looks like. So I try to do that with them, and I outline the 12 steps to them. And I tell them my experience with each one of the 12 steps, and if this is what they want, if this is what they want to do. I tell them what that's going to entail. I make no bones about a written inventory in the fourth step. I let them know that we're going to do three major inventories, and we're going to write a sex ideal. And I let them know that they're going to write about their resentments, their fears, and their sex conduct. And I don't soft sell it. And I talk to them real strongly about amends. And I let them know that if they owe money, and I've never known an alcoholic not to owe money, if they owe money, they will pay the money back. Not because I say so. That's because of what the big book says. And it says if we don't do it, we're liable to drink again. So after I outline that process for them, I give them anywhere from, depending on how bad off they are, how much of a grace period my intuition tells me that they have, I give them anywhere from 24 to 72 hours to think about it. To think about if this is really what they want to do. And I'll have them turn to page 59 and look at each step one by one and have them read the step to themselves. And if they care to do it in prayer form, they can do that. And I'll have them answer two questions for each step. First question is this what I want to do? Made a searching and fearless moral inventory of ourselves. Is this the step I want to do? Do I want to do this? And the second question I ask them is, am I willing to go to any lengths to do this? And they already know what any lengths looks like because I just got done explaining that to them. And I have them do that with each step. And just because they may answer, well, I don't know if this is really what I want to do. Let's say maybe for step 11. I don't knock them out of the game because of that. I just know as a sponsor or someone who's helping them through the steps, I just know that when we get to that point, I'm probably going to need to spend a little bit more time with them on that particular step. Kind of also works like the Bill W. exercise that we found in Bill's story. You know, with those people, I don't know if I mentioned this when I went over it in Chapter 7, but when I go over it like that, and I hate to use these words, but it usually shies away, or not shies away, it gets rid of the riffraff, so to speak. And I don't really, that's just lack of a better word. I don't know what word. It gets rid of the people that just really aren't interested in going through this in the first place. I take back the word riffraff. I really didn't mean that. No, I won't use that. Speaking of rehab mentality, there's a buddy of mine by the name of Indian Dave from Delaware, and I don't know why you reminded me of this, but you did. They have this thing in Delaware that people are always talking about, Karen and Sharon. And Dave told me one time that that's the rehab twins, Karen and Sharon. So, for whatever that's worth. But my point was, when I outline the program like that, the people who really aren't interested in the first place, they usually don't call back. You know, and again, it just boils down to why waste their time and why waste my time. When I could be really helping somebody else that wants it. So after that long diatribe, first full paragraph on 142. Next, he can be assured that you do not intend to lecture, moralize, or condemn. And that's kind of a what Bill and I like to call hookback references. It kind of says the same thing on page 91. Few lines up from the bottom, that if this was done formally, it was because of misunderstanding. And again, they're talking about the employer there. If possible, express a lack of hard feeling toward him. At this point, it might be well to explain alcoholism, the illness. Again, another great 12-stepping reference. explain alcoholism, the illness. You know, that's what Dr. Silkworth did for Bill. Bill didn't get sober until Dr. Silkworth explained alcoholism as an illness. Say that you believe he is gravely ill, just as Silky did with Bill. He's a gravely ill person with this qualification, being perhaps fatally ill. And it asks a few questions here. Does he want to get well? Now, I've found four different questions in the next few lines that I can ask the new prospect. And I'll read through them, and then I'll break them up into the four questions, and I'll show you what that looks like. So it says, does he want to get well? And I add to that, does he want to quit and get well? Because I think quitting first is probably a good thing to do. You ask because many alcoholics being warped and drugged, can you imagine that? A drunk being warped and drugged, do not want to quit. But does he? Will he take every necessary step, submit to anything to get well, to stop drinking forever? So, the four questions that I ask the prospect is, one, do you want to quit drinking for good and for all and get well? The second one is, will you take or are you willing to take every necessary step? That's the second question. Are you willing to take every necessary step? Third question is, are you willing to submit to anything? And the fourth question, to get well, excuse me. And the fourth question is, are you willing and ready to stop drinking forever? You know, I think in the beginning it's a real good idea to tell a newcomer, well, you know, just if you're having a hard time today, just don't drink for today. But I also need to, when I'm 12-stepping people, I also need to let them know that this is for a good and for all basis. I mean, telling somebody just don't drink for today, well, they might get the bright idea, well, then I won't drink today, but I sure as heck is drink tomorrow. And of course, you could always pull the gag on them that, you know, once you get through today, it's still today because tomorrow never gets here. But it was real important for me to see statements in this book to stop drinking forever. Dr. Bob said, quit drinking for good and for all. You know, yes, the one day at a time, slogan or what have you is very effective. I had some really rough times in the beginning, and quite frankly, I had to take it an hour at a time sometimes. But I think what one day at a time really refers to is that I quit drinking for good and for all, and via this 12-step program, I'm able to live life one day at a time. You know, and through speaking to old-timers and listening to a lot of tapes and reading stuff in our history, that's what the early members of Alcoholics Anonymous were about. They're about living life one day at a time. And because of that process, because of following the 12 steps, they're able to stay stopped in their drinking for good and for all. So I found these four questions pretty useful. If he says yes, does he really mean it? Or down inside, does he think he is fooling you? And that after rest and treatment, he will be able to get away with a few drinks now and then. And, you know, fortunately, we have a lot of people in our fellowship that do that. They go to a rehab center or a detox and dry out for a little while. And, you know, they get the Quickie Lube special and get their tires rotated. And you know, they can have a few drinks or so they think. But I've never seen a real alcoholic who's really afflicted with this disease be able to have a few drinks, you know, maybe for a little while, maybe for a couple days. But once the physical allergy bites you in the rear, so to speak, we're off to the races again. we believe a man or a woman should be thoroughly probed on these points. Be careful with that word, probed. No one got it. Did you get it? You got it. Be satisfied he is not deceiving himself or you. Whether you mention this book is a matter for your discretion. Again, that's a reference to the employer, but also remember that in chapter 7, working with others, they tell us, don't mention this book right off the bat. If the new prospect sees it and he's interested, then he can talk a little bit about the book. But, I don't know about you guys, but when the Spirit of God first awakened within me and I started working these steps and I started working with other drunks, I started pounding this book like it was a Bible or something, and that doesn't really turn drunks on too much, no more than Bible pounding did with us. So I'm very careful with that today. If he temporizes and still thinks he can ever drink again, even beer, I thought beer was a beverage, he might as well be discharged after the next bender, which if an alcoholic, he is almost certain to have. He should understand that emphatically. Either you're dealing with a man who can and will get well, or you're not. If not, why waste time with him? This may seem severe, but it is usually the best course. After satisfying yourself that your man wants to recover and that he will go to any extreme to do so, you may suggest a definite course of action. Again, there's that reference to going to any lengths again. It's using different words to mean the same thing. He's saying, go to any extreme to do so. By the way, this is the only chapter in the big book that wasn't, or the only chapter in the text portion of the big book that was not written by Bill Wilson. This chapter was written by Hank Parkhurst. Let's see. So you may suggest a definite course of action. For most alcoholics who are drinking or who are just getting over a spree, a certain amount of physical treatment is desirable, even imperative. Dr. Silkworth says it a little differently, in so many words that hospitalization is usually a good idea for a drunk. The matter of physical treatment should, of course, be referred to your own doctor or their own doctor if you're working one-on-one with a drunk. Whatever the method, its object is to thoroughly clear mind and body of the effects of alcohol. That's why detoxes and treatment centers are a good idea, because they clear the mind and the body. But what happens sometimes is that people who come to Alcoholics Anonymous after a 3-day or 5-day stint, as in a detox, or a 28-day stint, if there is any detoxes around for 28 days anymore, drunks think they're good to go, and then they're recovered just based on those 28 days. And what we forget is that those 28 days was just good enough to clear out the body of the alcohol and to clear the mind a little bit. But now what we're charged with in Alcoholics Anonymous is to awaken them spiritually. And the only way I've come to learn or come to experience a spiritual awakening is through the 12 steps of Alcoholics Anonymous, at least for this drunk. I mean, there's people have been having spiritual awakenings since the beginning of time. But the most effective way to bring about recovery for the most amount of alcoholics has been the 12 steps. Skip down to the next paragraph. It's the middle of page 143. If your man accepts your offer, it should be pointed out that physical treatment is but a small part of the picture. Though you are providing him with the best possible medical attention, he should understand that he must undergo a change of heart. Another way to say a spiritual experience or a spiritual awakening, a change of heart. Next few lines are really important. To get over drinking will require a transformation of thought and attitude. Boy, I'd love to hear that as a topic in an AA meeting, huh? Stick your hand up when someone says, well, does anyone have a topic in this meeting? Yeah, I do. I'd like to hear about the process for as many people who would like to share about it, I'd like to hear the process that we've all taken to get over drinking. What's the process you've done to have a transformation of thought and attitude? And after that's brought up, it would probably be followed up with a lot of moments of silence, followed by the Lord's Prayer, of course. But I judge no one. This is what I get for listening to Chris R. before I do one of these things. Unbelievable. We all had to place recovery above everything. Pretty important statement, huh? We all had to place recovery above everything. For without recovery, we would have lost both home and business. Important stuff there. If and this is often said in the fellowship, that which I place above recovery, I will lose. And that's a very true statement. Go to 144. First full paragraph. We suggest, let me see if I can say that again. We suggest you draw the book to the attention of the doctor who is to attend your patient during treatment. If the book is read the moment the patient is able, and this is the key statement here, if the book is read the moment the patient is able, while acutely depressed, they made reference to that in chapter 7, realization of his condition may come to him. It's better to approach a man who's coming off a bender, because chances are he's going to be depressed and he's going to be more receptive. We hope the doctor will tell the patient the truth about his condition, much like Silky did with Bill, whatever that happens to be. The truth is, if you continue to go on drinking, pal, you're screwed. When the man is presented with this volume, it is best that no one tell him he must abide by its suggestions. The man must decide for himself. It's a fine line, really. Because, I tell you, hopefully my book pounding days are done. And the last thing I want to be referred to in Alcoholics Anonymous is a big book thumper. Because of statements like this. Because that type of mentality, that type of attitude has the ability to turn off as many people as it does with the mentality of just don't drink and go to meetings. But this statement is very true, because it says that, first of all, I can't tell anybody what they must do when it comes to anything. All I can do is tell them what worked for me and suggest that if they can identify with my story, if they be a real alcoholic, then this can and will work for them also. But of course, they must decide for themselves. And that little exercise that I bring people through when I give them anywhere from 24 to 72 hours to make up their mind, it speaks directly to this. Because during that time, they're making up their mind, they're deciding for themselves if this is the work that they want to do. You're betting, of course, that your changed attitude plus the contents of this book will turn the trick. In some cases it will, and in others it may not. But we think that if you persevere, the percentage of successes will gratify you. Skip down a couple lines, just the end of a paragraph, and it says, we are sure a great deal can be accomplished by the use of the book alone. I've seen people, first of all, I don't know many drunks that have been able to read this book cover to cover. That's why I no longer send them home with a big book and say, read Doctor's Opinion, first 164 pages, and call me up and tell me what you think. Because I know I was not able to do that. So what I like to do is read the book with people, or read the book to people, to the people I'm working with. But I've seen people begin to read this book on their own, and man, they just lit up because the book, it brings great hope. You know, it's one of the best. It's one of the best tools for sponsorship I've ever seen. You know, it's that old adage of I better be on my best guard, because I never know when I'm going to be the best example of a big book for somebody else. But I think the best example of a big book is this big book. So that's why I try my best not to add or delete from it, and I try to give them the real deal. I usually, whenever I give a talk or tell my story or do one of these things, as I'm sure I did way back in March when we got started, I usually let people know that if you hear me say anything that cannot be reconciled with this big book, Alcoholics Anonymous, don't pay too much attention to it. And please tell me about it after the meeting. So again, we're sure a great deal can be accomplished by use of the book alone. 145. Three lines down. In this connection, can you remain undisturbed if the man proceeds to tell you shocking things? And this is in direct connection with the instructions for the employer. But that can be applied to our fifth step. You know, can I remain undisturbed if someone tells me that he murdered somebody, or that he hit and ran somebody while in a blackout? You know, that stuff doesn't disturb me today. But what I need to do is show that other person that I have a confidence, and I need to keep that stuff to myself and not tell anybody else about it. Quite frankly, usually when I hear fifth steps nowadays, I forget what they tell me anyway. So having only a couple brain cells left has its advantages. But as a drunk who's been sober for a little while and who's been doing this work for a while, really nothing much shocks me anymore. He may, for example, reveal that he has padded his expense account. Alcoholics padding the expense account? No, never. Or that he has planned to take your best customers away from you, as far as the employer is concerned. This is ninth step stuff, you know. In fact, he may say almost anything if he has accepted our solution, which, as you know, demands rigorous honesty. I've also learned that there is a fine line between rigorous honesty and stupidity. If you're not on your ninth step, I don't know that it's necessarily a good idea to go to your employer and say, I've been stealing from you for years. You know, let's do some inventory. Let's do a fifth step. Let's do six and seven and make our eighth step list. And then we can go to the employer in a tactful and sensible manner and admit these things and try to make amends. In fact, he may say almost anything if he has accepted our solution, which, as you know, demands rigorous honesty. Can you charge this off as you would a bad account and start fresh with him? If he owes you money, you may wish to make terms. Good ninth step stuff in here. If he speaks of his home situation, you can undoubtedly make helpful suggestions. Great tips for a sponsor, sponsee, or what I like to call a sponsor-protege relationship. If he speaks of his home situation, you can undoubtedly make helpful suggestions. By no means am I a doctor. I'm not a marriage counselor. I'm not an attorney or anything like that. But what I do is I have experience, and I've been able to make some amends and restitution within my family. I've been able to overcome some situations in my marriage. So if I'm working with another alcoholic and they discuss similar problems with me, I'm able to share with them solutions that I've applied and the results. Can he talk frankly with you so long as he does not bear business tales or criticize his associates? This directly speaks to gossip. And a few lines down, it's going to talk more about gossip. With this kind of employee, such an attitude will command undying loyalty. Next sentence. This next sentence is by no means an understatement. The greatest enemies of us alcoholics are resentment, jealousy, envy, frustration, and fear. Again, no understatement there. Skip down to the next paragraph. And again, we're talking about gossip here. One instance comes to mind in which a malicious individual was always making friendly jokes about an alcoholic's drinking exploits. In this way, he was slyly carrying tales. Carrying tales means gossiping. In another case, an alcoholic was sent to a hospital for treatment. Only a few knew of it at first, but within a short time, it was billboarded. Can you imagine? Billboarded throughout the entire company. Joe Schmo has gone to rehab. News at 6. Naturally, this sort of thing decreases the man's chance of recovery. And just to, I guess, get up on my high horse for a minute about gossip and Alcoholics Anonymous. I get real passionate about this, so I have to kind of be careful with what I'm going to say. But I've seen one of the greatest killers in Alcoholics Anonymous I've seen is gossiping. And it's a real shame. Breaking of confidences in fist steps, or just talking behind people's back and backbiting and slandering. It's a killing thing. It kills, besides alcohol and resentments, I think it kills more alcoholics more than anything else. It's a real dangerous thing. Don't do it, please. Don't gossip, period, in your daily life. But please, don't gossip in Alcoholics Anonymous. It kills people. That was actually said with love and kindness, I think. So naturally, this sort of thing decreases the man's chance of recovery. Page 146, first full paragraph. Yeah, we might get done with this in under an hour. Hope you guys have a lot to say tonight. As a class, alcoholics are energetic people. I don't know. When I was drinking, I don't know if I was too energetic. I was kind of a couch potato myself. But I think they're speaking towards when we get sober here. They work hard and play hard. Your man should be on his mettle to make good. Being somewhat weak-ended and faced with physical and mental readjustment to a life which knows no alcohol, he may overdo. Can you imagine an alcoholic overdoing anything? You may have to curb his desire to work 16 hours a day, much over 8 hours. But I have known people that just really throw themselves into work. And, you know, it's good to show your employer that you're sober and you want to make good and you want to make amends and you want to contribute to the company. But you're not doing yourself or your family any good if two-thirds of your day are spent in the workplace. I worked with a man once who insisted that he needed to pull double shifts all the time and work a bunch of overtime And he insists that he need to do this because he had two families to support. One was his immediate family, and the other was his daughter's family. And I just tried to encourage him that there, you know, is it possible there could be a better way? Because this gentleman was continually dying from untreated alcoholism. He would give the steps a try, and I hate to say it, but he had a number of years dry under his belt without drinking. But he continued to engage in these other things that just, it wasn't a good thing. And they were definitely symptoms of untreated alcoholism. And the common thread that I always saw is that he refused to slack off on the overworking. You know, we can join Workaholics Anonymous just as quickly as we can join Alcoholics Anonymous. This whole business about addiction swapping. I mean, believe me, I know about swapping addictions just as much as anyone. You know, put alcohol down, and you know, what do you substitute it with? You know, sex or pornography or what have you. Put that down, and what do? You eat a lot. You gain a bunch of weight. You know, so hopefully we can get free of all those addictions through the 12 steps. Okay, where was I? He may wish to do a lot for other alcoholics, and something of the sort may come up during business hours. A reasonable amount of latitude will be helpful. This work is necessary to maintain his sobriety. You know, it's always great to have an employer who understands what you're doing and what you're trying to do in AA. And not all of them have that type of latitude, but a lot of them do. You know, if you tell them what you are and what you're trying to do, a lot of them will be understanding, and they'll let you make up the time another way, or you know, even often enough, they'll say, "Don't worry about it." You know, if this is helping you stay sober, and you're helping other alcoholics to achieve sobriety, then you know, go ahead and do it. Just don't take advantage of me or the company. And you know, I've taken half days, or have taken days off to do work in AA or to 12-step other alcoholics, and it's definitely understood. After your man has gone along without drinking for a few months, you may be able to make use of his services with other employees who are giving you the alcoholic runaround, provided, of course, they are willing to have a third party in the picture. An alcoholic who has recovered, there's that word again, recovered, ED, but holds a relatively unimportant job can talk to a man with a better position. I find it real interesting that it says, after a man has gone along without drinking for a few months, and then a few lines later, they refer to that man as having been recovered. Real interesting statement. You know, it's great for me to know that I don't have to be 10 years away from a drink to be recovered. All we have to do is go through a few simple steps and have a spiritual awakening. And this book refers to a person who has done that. It refers to that person as having been recovered. Again, never cured, because I will always have the physical allergy to alcohol. But I no longer suffer from the mental obsession, and the spiritual malady is in check. Therefore, I'm recovered. Next paragraph, your man... I'd be careful with this statement, but it does say your man may be trusted. But again, what a great promise for an employer to know that an alcoholic who has wreaked havoc for such a long time can now be trusted. That's saying a lot about the program of Alcoholics Anonymous. long experience with alcoholic excuses now naturally, getting tongue-tied tonight, arouses suspicion. When his wife next calls saying he is sick, you might jump to the conclusion he is drunk. If he is and is still trying to recover, he will tell you about it, if even it means the loss of his job. For he knows he must be honest if he would live at all. Rigorous honesty. He will appreciate knowing you are not bothering your head about him. And again, these are great tools for a sponsor, that you are not suspicious, nor are you trying to run his life. Imagine a sponsor wanting to run their sponsee's life. So he will be shielded from temptation to drink. You know, again, it tells us in that chapter, Working with Others, that a man who is trying to be shielded from temptation to drink is just headed for trouble anyway. Because if I need to shield myself or anybody else from a drink, it means that I haven't recovered and there's something wrong with my spiritual status. If he is consciously following the program of recovery, he can go anywhere your business may call him. In cases he does stumble, even once, you will have to decide whether to let him go. If you are sure he doesn't mean business, there is no doubt you should discharge him. If on the contrary you are sure he is doing his utmost, you may wish to give him another chance. Again, we can turn these statements around when working with other alcoholics. Just because a person relapses doesn't mean I have to kick them to the curb. But if they come up to me and say, Mike, I've been drinking with impunity for the past month, and I think I'm doing okay, then, you know, my attitude is, well, you know, good luck with that drinking with impunity stuff, and give me a call each week and let me know how you're doing with that, because you know, I'd like to hear if you're successful with it. Especially that you just told me a month ago that you're a real alcoholic. But again, I don't, just because they have a few relapses doesn't mean that I don't work with them. Go down to the last full paragraph of the page. This speaks to what I call an employee intervention. After reading this book, a junior executive can go to such a man and say approximately this: look here, Ed, do you want to stop drinking or not? You put me on the spot every time you get drunk. It isn't fair to me or the firm. I have been learning something about alcoholism. If you are an alcoholic, you're a mighty sick man. Which is always good news to the drunk. And besides, you act like one. At that point, we usually run out of the room, deck them, or slam the door. The firm wants to help you get over it, and if you are interested, there is a way out. If you take it, your past will be forgotten, and the fact that you went away for treatment will not be mentioned. But if you cannot or will not stop drinking, I think you ought to resign. Skip next paragraph. Go to, it boils right down to this. No man should be fired just because he is alcoholic. If he wants to stop, he should be afforded a real chance. If he cannot or does not want to stop, he should be discharged. The exceptions are few. That's all I have to cover on this chapter. We do have a few minutes left, so why don't I just get into vision for you, and we'll finish. I won't be able to finish all the chapter tonight, but I will finish it up next week. Chapter 11, vision for you. I think a good word to look up at this point is the word vision. Vision for you. Remember that page 85 says, a vision of God's will for us. For most normal folks, drinking means conviviality, companionship, and colorful imagination. It means release from care, boredom, and worry. It is joyous intimacy with friends and a feeling that life is good. But not so with us in those last days of heavy drinking. The next few paragraphs here are going to speak directly to the spiritual malady, something that we spent weeks going over. But not so with us in those last days of heavy drinking. The old pleasures were gone. They were but memories. Never could we recapture the great moments of the past. There was an insistent yearning to enjoy life as we once did, and a heartbreaking obsession that some new miracle of control would enable us to do it. You know, great statements to turn into questions for yourself, especially to take a look at your last couple months of drinking. There was always one more attempt and one more failure. The less people tolerated us, the more we withdrew from society, from life itself. As we became subjects of King Alcohol, I love that, shivering denizens of his mad realm, the chilling vapor that is loneliness settled down. Subjects of King Alcohol, shivering denizens of his mad realm. Another way that can be said is the word denizens means occupants or residents. So I was definitely a resident of 101 King Alcohol Boulevard, that's for sure. It thickened, ever becoming blacker. Some of us sought out sordid places, hoping to find understanding, companionship, and approval. Momentarily we did. Then would come oblivion and the awful awakening to face the hideous four horsemen. See if this doesn't match your bottom. I know it does mine. Terror, bewilderment, frustration, despair. Whew. What a way to describe an alcoholic bottom, huh? Unhappy drinkers who read this page will understand, and I definitely understand. Now and then a serious drinker, being dry at the moment, says, "I don't miss it at all. Feel better, work better, having a better time." As ex-problem drinkers, we smile at such a sally. Who's Sally? But seriously, the word sally means a quick-witted response from a defensive person. Has anyone in this room ever given a quick-witted response because they were defensive? No. We know our friend is like a boy whistling in the dark to keep up his spirits. He fools himself. Inwardly, he would give anything to take a half a dozen drinks and get away with them. I'd like to pose a question. If you're sitting in this room tonight not doing too well, is this something that you're currently experiencing? Inwardly, are you experiencing that you would give anything to take a half a dozen drinks and get away with them? He will presently try the old game again, for he isn't happy about his sobriety. Talking about untreated alcoholism or the spiritual malady, having been removed from alcohol for a period of time. But I tell you, this next statement is something that still gets me today, because I was able to identify with it so heavily. For those that may have heard my story, I dried out for 3 days sitting on my father's couch before I came in to my very first AA meeting. And I tell you, the way I felt on that couch during those 3 days before I got to AA is described in these next couple sentences. He cannot picture life with or without alcohol. Someday he will be unable to imagine life either with alcohol or without it. Excuse me, I misread that first sentence. He cannot picture life without alcohol. Someday he will be unable to imagine life either with alcohol or without it. Then he will know loneliness such as few do. Whew, describes me to a T. He will be at the jumping off place. He will wish for the end. And I tell you, I did. We have shown how we got out from under. How we got out from under alcoholism. They've shown us that in the preceding chapters. You say, yes, I'm willing, but am I to be consigned to a life where I shall be stupid, boring, and glum like some religious people I know? I know I must get along without liquor, but how can I? Have you a sufficient substitute? Yes, there is a substitute, and it is vastly more than that. It is the fellowship of Alcoholics Anonymous. There you will find a release from care, boredom, and worry. Your imagination will be fired, as opposed to being fired from your job. Life will mean something at last. You know, are these promises that are currently coming true for me today? Life will mean something at last. The most satisfactory years of your existence will lie ahead. Thus we find the fellowship, and so will you. How is this to come about, you ask? Where am I to find these people? You are going to meet these new friends in your own community. Near you, alcoholics are dying helplessly like people in a sinking ship. If you live in a large place, there are hundreds. High and low, rich and poor, these are future fellows of Alcoholics Anonymous. Among them, you will make lifelong friends. You will be bound to them. Ask yourself, with the people you know in Alcoholics Anonymous and the people that helped you early on, or even presently, are you bound to them with new and wonderful ties? For you will escape disaster together, and you will commence shoulder to shoulder your common journey. Then you will know what it means to give of yourself that others may survive and rediscover life. You will learn the full meaning of love thy neighbor as thyself. Beautiful promise there. It may seem incredible that these men are to become happy, respected, and useful once more. How can they rise out of such misery, bad dispute, and hopelessness? The practical answer is that since these things have happened among us, they can happen with you. And again, a lot of the stuff in this chapter can be called 12-step tips because it's stuff that we can share with the new person. You know, since these things have happened for me and a whole host of other people in AA, they can happen for you too. Should you wish them above all else and be willing to make use of our experience, we are sure they will come. The age of miracles is still with us. Our own recovery proves that. Our hope is that when this chip of a book is launched on the world tide of alcoholism, defeated drinkers will seize upon it to follow its suggestions. Many, we are sure, will rise to their feet and march on. They will approach still other sick ones, and fellowships of Alcoholics Anonymous may spring up in each city and hamlet. Heavens for those who must find a way out. In the chapter Working with Others, you gathered an idea of how we approached and aided others to help. I think what we'll do is pick it up on page 153 next week. And I'll try to cover with you guys some of the history that's discussed in this chapter the best I can. As I may have said before, Barefoot Bill is a little bit more schooled with the history than I am. I'll try to do the best I can because I feel it's real important, and I think it's by no coincidence that the book opens up with history, and also as far as the text portion of this book is concerned, it closes up with history. So there's a statement that's often been said that if I don't know where I've come from, I'm not going to know where I'm going to be headed. So I think the history in Alcoholics Anonymous is real vital. What we'll do at this point is open up the remainder of the meeting for discussion from you guys. And next week we will conclude Chapter 11, A Vision for You, and we will conclude our what's turned out to be a 20-week journey through the big book, Alcoholics Anonymous. And I definitely look forward to hearing from some of you guys next week on what your experiences with the steps have been. And we'll open it up now, and thanks for letting me share. Hi, everyone. My name is Mike, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, Mike.
This is kind of bittersweet for me after 20 weeks of us all getting together, and there's definitely a few mainstays that have been here throughout the whole thing, and to me that's just merely, it's incredible, especially since I've been one of the speakers. So it's been a really incredible experience for me. I'm looking forward to the time being freed up, but I'm not looking forward to the loss, so to speak. The connection that I've developed with you guys over the past 20 weeks has been incredible. And I hope we can do it again sometime soon. That's for sure. I had a brainstorm, or maybe it was a brain fart, this morning, that the voice just said, why don't you do something similar to this starting in the fall, but why don't you do it with the 12 and 12? Because for a while now, I've been looking for a way to broaden and deeper my experience with the 12 and 12, and I don't do well with just picking up a book and studying it for myself. I love the big book because you can go through the big book in an experiential sort of way. With the 12 and 12, it's not really line by line directions, actions, so to speak. It's more of a here's what it's like after we went through the work, and this is how we can broaden and deepen our experience with the 12 steps. So I was thinking about doing that. I was thinking about throwing the traditions in there because the 12 traditions, as far as I'm concerned, are a lost art form. And the way to not chase people away would probably be to rotate a step in a tradition. So the first week we do step one, second week we do tradition one, third week step two, on and on like that. So I don't know when it's going to happen, but in my mind it just kind of seems like the next logical thing. And we'll see where that goes. See if there's any interest for it. If you guys are interested in that, please let me know. So let me do a review of the last 19 weeks. No, I'm just kidding. We have covered from the title page up to the first couple pages into A Vision for You, which means we have gone through as a group the 12 steps of the program of recovery as described in the big book. I know some people from this group, including myself, who have written inventory. I know some people who have shared those inventories. And I know some people right here tonight who have begun the process of 6 and 7 and begun to make amends off of that inventory. And hopefully those same people, or hopefully all of us for that matter, have renewed our spiritual efforts with steps 10, 11, and 12. I know I have for sure. 12th step, having had a spiritual awakening as the result, not a result. There's one result. The result of these steps, we tried to carry this message. What message? The message that we can have a spiritual awakening and we can recover. We have recovered from a seemingly hopeless state of mind and body, that we can recover from alcoholism. So having had a spiritual awakening as the result of these steps, we tried to carry this message, the message in the book, to other alcoholics. Remember, we tried to carry the message. We don't always do it successfully, but we do it. We do the best job we can. I think the other person's willingness and the grace of God usually has something to do in the outcome of a 12-step call. It's often been said that I've never had a bad experience with a 12-step call because I've stayed sober. And I truly believe that to be accurate, but I'd like to add that I've never had a bad experience with a 12-step call, or I've never had a failed experience with the 12-step, because in trying to carry this message, I have always fulfilled what the 12-step requires of me, and that's to try to carry this message. It doesn't say we're always going to be successful. And to practice these principles in all our affairs. And that's what we've been spending the past few weeks on. Another workshop I'd like to do someday, or I'd like to go to, if there's anyone out there in tape land that hears this, I'd like to see a workshop where we cover each and every principle in the big book. Love and tolerance, kindness, patience, on and on and on. You could probably find a handful of principles right in the doctor's opinion. And go from the title page right to page 164 and see what can come about as the result of that. I think that would be neat. Bill and myself, we were talking today, and we recently got, or I recently got a set of tapes. It's a three-tape set on the sixth and seventh step. And it's a three-man panel. And each of the three panelists were talking about their experience with the sixth and seventh step. One of them had, I believe, 19 years of sobriety. Another one had 20-something years of sobriety. And the third gentleman, who I really connected with, had over 30 years of sobriety. And they kind of did it, and they had different sessions, different meetings, because it went on for hours. And they kind of talked about what 6 and 7 were like for them when they first came in, or when they were newly coming at the steps. One guy talked about it at 8 years. Another guy talked about it at 20 years. And they just kind of went on like that. And they just kind of gave me a look and a new experience and a new hope with the sixth and seventh step that I was never able before to muster on my own. It was pretty incredible. And I passed the tape set off to Bill, and he loved it just as much as I did. So, and I know he's been doing a lot of work with six and seven and a lot of research with those two steps for a long time. I, on the other hand, have just begun to redouble my efforts with 6 and 7. So who knows, there could be a workshop on just those two steps somewhere down the line. There's a man by the name of Bill P. from Hazelden, Minnesota. He wrote a book called Drop the Rock, and it's all about steps 6 and 7. If you ever get a chance to hear the Drop the Rock story, it's a really neat analogy, really neat parable, so to speak. But this is where I'm currently at.